Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. It's Thursday, July 28. I'm your reader, Kathleen. From the front page of the Gazette today, this main story by Grace King, Helping Children See Their Value. Students plan their future at Leaders, Believers, Achievers. Controlled chaos reigns as middle school students defend their side during a game of this or that at the CR Dreams Afternoon Summer Program, where they learn leadership skills, set goals, and build a plan toward making them come true. Students argued low-stakes points of view in debates of chocolate or vanilla ice cream, mornings or nights, and reading versus watching TV. In doing so, they're learning how to communicate more effectively, debate in a healthy way, and take turns talking. We struggle with it sometimes, Callie Brown, age 19, a coach with Leaders, Believers, Achievers, said with a smile. This is the second year that CR Dreams, organized by the Cedar Rapids-based Leaders, Believers, Achievers Foundation, has operated its seven-week summer program. There are 60 students enrolled in the program, which ends on Friday. Overall, the Leaders, Believers, Achievers Foundation mentors 600 teenagers in the Cedar Rapids Community School District through in-school, after-school, and online programs. The foundation's executive director, Al O'Bannon, a certified school counseling leadership specialist, said he wants to help children see their value. Brown, who graduated from Prairie High School in 2021, participated in the program when she was a student. Joining Leaders, Believers, Achievers as a coach this summer was the perfect opportunity to be a mentor to younger students, something she's always been interested in, Brown said. She walks students through daily affirmations. They randomly draw popsicle sticks that have affirmative words on them, such as strong, compassionate, and smart. Then they talk about what the words mean and how they embody them. As a student, Brown said she learned the importance of sharing her story, including her goals. You don't walk around telling everyone your dreams, but O'Bannon teaches us to do that, Brown said. When I started doing that, he overheard me and happened to know someone who knew someone with a job opening that was the perfect opportunity for me. Share your story because you never know who is listening. Brown is starting at the University of Iowa's Cardiac Sonographer program in August. She'll be trained to use imaging technology to help physicians diagnose heart problems in patients. Thanks to O'Bannon's connections, Brown works at Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital as a radiology transporter, which is giving her experience in patient care. Like Brown, current students in the Leaders, Believers, Achievers summer program have big goals. One student shared with O'Bannon that he wants to be a professional basketball player in the NBA. While O'Bannon encourages that goal, he also wants students to see the other opportunities that are out there for them. For example, the NBA is a business. You don't have to be a player. You could be a scout, referee, work in the business department. There are all these opportunities they don't see, O'Bannon said. The program also teaches students that taking their education seriously will impact their future dreams and goals. Most students said they are excited for the coming school year, including continuing their math and science classes. Braylon Milhouse, age 18, a rising eighth grader at Taft Middle School, wants to be a chef someday. He enjoys cooking for his family, especially chicken sandwiches and chicken wings. He's learning about the opportunities his school offers that can help him achieve this goal. Those include a consumer science class that can teach him how to make other types of dishes, like smoothies, pizza, and omelets, Braylon said. Another student, age 12, a rising seventh grader at Harding Middle School, is learning to be a leader. My mom tells me I'm a leader at home, with her eight siblings, Sulaya said. She wants to be a prosecuting attorney someday, mostly so she can learn how to argue better with her brothers. Karma Walter, age 12, a rising seventh grader at Roosevelt, wants to be a doctor or a surgeon because she likes to help people. Damarian Walter, 13, a rising 8th grader at Roosevelt Creative Corridor Business Academy, wants to play for the NFL someday or be a music artist, specifically a rapper. He loves Leaders, Believers, Achievers for the 100% positive environment. Amanda Beckett, 17, is a coach with Leaders, Believers, Achievers, and a rising senior at Jefferson High. She said students are learning that continuing education is possible for them and can be affordable with scholarships and grants. "You're not alone," Beckett said. "We tell them that all the time." This story by Vanessa Miller, Regents OK, a 4.25% tuition hike for this fall. State resident undergraduates headed to any of Iowa's three public universities this fall will pay 4.25% more than students did last year, after the Board of Regents on Wednesday unanimously approved tuition increases across their campuses. At Iowa State and the University of Northern Iowa, the 4.25% hike applies to all students, including resident and non-resident graduate and undergraduate students. The University of Iowa is imposing the same 4.25% increase to all its resident students, amounting to a $355 bump for undergraduates and a $443 hike for graduate students. But rather than applying the same percentage increase to non-residents at both levels, the UI is making the dollar increase equal for students from outside Iowa, amounting to a 1.2% increase for non-residents and a 1.5% increase for non-resident grad students. For students in costlier programs, the campuses have applied varying tuition rate across all levels, amounting to some bigger percent and dollar increases, like $2,000 and $3,000 plus hikes for some UI dentistry students. The tuition increases, which the board said were compelled by weaker than requested funding from the from Iowa legislature, will amount to meaningful revenue bumps for the UI and ISU when paired with enrollment projections, according to fiscal 2023 budget documents that the board approved on Wednesday. The UI expects its tuition revenue to increase $20.1 million, or 4.3%, this year, with the expected tuition increases and enrollment changes. ISU is looking at $21.8 million in a bump in tuition revenue, 4.8% above last year, due, like the UI, to rate hikes and enrollment projections. The UI projected tuition revenue increase is its biggest since at least 2017. ISU's projected increase is its largest since 2018, having budgeted for $26 million in tuition revenue bump in 2017. UNI, unlike the UI and ISU, this year is expecting a drop in tuition revenue despite its rate increases, possibly hinting at its enrollment projections, which have not been made public yet. With the projected enrollment and the proposed tuition rates, FY 2023 tuition revenues are $2.9 million less than the previous year's budget, according to Regent documents. Including this year, UNI has projected declining tuition revenue for five straight years, with its last increase coming in 2017, when it budgeted for a $2.6 million increase. The campuses report heavy reliance on tuition revenue for their general operations. The UI reports tuition comprises 63% of its $768 million general university revenue budget, 28% coming from state appropriations. Tuition income counts for 71% of ISU's general university revenue of $674.8 million, with 26% coming from the state. UNI, conversely, reports 59% of its general operating revenue comes from state appropriations, with tuition accounting for 40% of the budgeted revenue. With the base tuition increases approved Wednesday, resident undergrads will pay $8,711 at the UI, $8,678 at ISU, and $8,111 at UNI. Combined with new fee and room and board rate increases, the total cost of attendance for resident undergraduates this coming year is estimated at $26,686 at UI, $23,471 at ISU, and $21,988 at UNI. Moving on to the Iowa Today page, on page two, this story is by Sabine Martin. CR will begin charging $1 fares for bus rides September 6th. Cedar Rapids Transit will start collecting bus fares from passengers on September 6th, but at a lower cost of $1 for riders, following approval from the City Council on Tuesday. Bus rides were free during the pandemic, with the city by allocating $2.88 million in federal pandemic funds in fiscal 2021 and $3.72 million in fiscal 2022 to subsidize the transit service. Cedar Rapids Transit Manager Brad DeBrower said the lower fees in September, going from $1.50 to $1, will potentially encourage ridership and equity for riders. "We're going to switch the programs that we are currently that are half fare. So instead of a full fare and half fare, we're proposing a full fare and a free fare," he said. "A lot of individuals have no other means to have transportation, and we want to try to make it as burden-free as possible." DeBrower said the Cedar Rapids Transit budgeted American Rescue Plan Act funding as a reserve to offset the reduced fare for the upcoming fiscal year. "We just see this as a unique opportunity to use those transit-dedicated ARPA funds to allow us to run this lower fare program for hopefully the next several years," he said. "As far as the revenue level, we know it's going to be lower than what we have had in the past, but it is still going to hopefully generate a modest level that we can use to help put forward operations or maybe matching funds for some of our capital grants." Revisions have been made to those who qualify for a free fare. Seniors age 65 or over with proof of age or a free fare ID card, passengers in the student-sponsored fare program, passengers with disabilities with Americans with Disabilities Act paratransit card or a free fare ID card, Medicare passengers with a Medicare card or the free fare ID card, income-based program passengers with a free fare ID card, and children age 12 and under. Cedar Rapids Transit renewed the student-sponsored fare program that started in 2019 with Kirkwood Community College, Coe College, and Cedar Rapids Schools, and is waiting to hear back from area high schools on the program. DeBrower said, "We were up about 7% in the ridership, primarily because of the students, and then that's when COVID-19 hit and everything fell," he said. Fiscal 2022 passenger revenue was $73,000 from the student-sponsored fare program, totaling 739,445 rides, compared to pre-COVID passenger revenue of 870,298 for 1,246,374 rides in fiscal 2019, according to Cedar Rapids Transit documents. The fare revisions also apply to multi-day passes, and those passes include: a 31-day or monthly pass is $30. A 10-day ride pass is $10. Day passes are $2. Single-ride tickets sold to human service agencies are 50 cents. And the ADA paratransit service contracted with Linn County Lifts is $2. Also on the Iowa Today page, the council okays a subdivision near New Cargill Rail Yard. This story is by Marissa Payne. Though some residents opposed plans to build 89 single-family houses east of the Rompott neighborhood and Cargill's contentious new rail yard, the Cedar Rapids City Council has unanimously backed the developer's proposal for construction of new homes. With 3 of 9 council members absent, the council on Tuesday rejected 2 appeals of the City Planning Commission's July 7 vote to okay a preliminary plat for the Kestrel Heights subdivision, which will be built in 4 phases over the next 7 to 10 years. The vote allows the developer, Grayhurst Enterprises, to proceed with plans to build new homes that will fill 65 acres of undeveloped land north of Otis Road Southeast and east of Cole Street Southeast. Some residents oppose the plan because they believe it will disturb the existing green space, increase traffic, negatively affect stormwater management, and violate the city's comprehensive plan that guides Cedar Rapids' growth. Had there been no appeals under the city's subdivision ordinance, the preliminary plat would not have come to the Council for Consideration, Development Services Manager Ken DeKaiser said. The land is zoned suburban residential large lot district, so rezoning was not needed. The City Planning Commission advanced the project because it met the city's comprehensive plan. It also complies with Cedar Rapids' subdivision ordinance because the planned infrastructure for water and sewer meets the city's engineer design standards, DeKaiser said. Kestrel Heights will be a nice area to live in, said Vicki Norris, co-owner of Greyhurst Enterprises. We just feel like it's going to be really a good thing for the neighborhood, Brian Norris, president of Greyhurst Enterprises, said as he communicated with neighbors and city staff to improve the development through 23 versions of the plan. We believe that everything has been done that the city has asked, that we have followed up on all the tasks since approval, and we are ready to move forward on the next stage of development, he said. Margaret Antonelli, who moved into a home on Otis Road Southeast from Marion shortly before the 2020 derecho, said the privacy of the Southeast Cedar Rapids neighborhood was enticing. She fears having more nearby properties will disrupt that, and asked for the council's due diligence in considering the preliminary plat. This was the perfect house for us, with the views, with the country living that we all love, everything that we wanted, Antonelli said. Antonelli also was concerned selling homes near Cargill's rail yard on Stewart Road Southeast, which is slated to be operational by September, though the project remains in litigation. She said she wanted transparent conversations with the city and developer, and for the city to be honest about the neighborhoods this will affect. Do we really want kids playing down by the rail yard and railroad? Antonelli asked. Heidi Horner, who appealed the Planning Commission's decision on the subdivision, said that the character of the neighborhood is nature and open space. Her main argument was that the development violated the city's comprehensive plan. The area was not part of the growth plan, and it lacks key infrastructure to support residential development. This specific project has snowballed from the original concept of a handful of nice large lots in a park into an absolute mess of tiny little lots crammed together so that the developer can afford the required infrastructure, Horner said. Councilmember Ashley Van Orney said the city's annual Maxwell Housing Study, which shows the demand for various types of housing in Cedar Rapids, demonstrates the need for single-family houses like the ones planned for Kestrel Heights. A May draft copy of the study, presented recently to the Council's Development Committee, shows demand for 1,596 single-family homes through 2030. Van Orney said residents need to be prepared for their neighborhoods to change as surrounding areas grow. When we have these things available, we have to realize that just because it's what it is now doesn't mean that we can promise you that, or unless you own that land, that you get to keep it that way, Van Orney said. Also in Iowa Today News, the Regents raise UI North Liberty Hospital budget to $525 million. This story is by Vanessa Miller. The State Board of Regents on Wednesday unanimously agreed to increase the budget for University of Iowa Healthcare's new facility in North Liberty by 33%, bringing the total price tag to $525.6 million, the costliest new hospital in state history. The UI brought its budget request to Regents in response to multiple convergent construction industry challenges, such as worldwide and local construction market inflation, higher raw material prices, limited availability of construction materials, and local construction trade labor shortages. UI officials stress they're not changing the scope of the 469,000 square foot building. Administrators hope to return to the board before year's end to seek another budget revision, this time in the downward direction, said Rod Leonards, UI Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations. That could happen after UIHC finishes awarding 64 bid packages for the project, which has been under construction for months at Highway 965 and Forever Green Road in North Liberty. Calling the $525.6 million budget a worst-case scenario, Leonards said expectations are bids will come in below revised projections. When we realize those bids in roughly a month from now, we'll know where we stand, and that will allow us to assess and come back to the Board of Regents with the results, hopefully a revised downward budget, he said. The UI is desperate for more space, reportedly turning away 2,400 transfer requests a year and watching 6,800 Iowans leave the state for care. UIHC officials told Regents they considered either halting the project or curtailing its scope and size, but they had concerns with both those options. The impact of delaying our project is significant on patient care. Interim UIHC CEO Kim Hunter said healthcare access for Iowans would be reduced. Providing complex care to our patients is already strained, and this would further strain that. Plus, she said, UI officials expect costs will continue to increase past August 1st, and global forces putting pressure on the market show no signs of waning, like the war between Russia and Ukraine. Wouldn't you know it, they're the third and the fourth largest aluminum producers in the world, she said. Also, we have a shortage of electricians locally. We have about 25% locally of what we need for this particular project. Downsizing seemed an equally ill-advised avenue, UI officials said, thus the recommendation to proceed with the worst-case costs. I recognize concerns some may have about increasing the budget, Regents President Michael Richards said. The increases are not due to changes in plans or design of the hospital. Those remain the same. What has changed considerably, Richards said, are the costs and scarcity of materials and labor. UIHC officials affirmed for Richards that no state or tuition dollars will go into the project, which is being paid for by UIHC building usage funds, gifts, and bonds. The North Liberty facility is the first step to create more capacity and improve our healthcare service to the people of Iowa, Richards said. Referencing a new inpatient tower and an ambulatory care center, UIHC wants to build on its main Iowa City campus within the next decade. He said those projects can't proceed until the North Liberty facility wraps. The delay or downsizing of this project will likely delay those other projects, thus delaying greater access to health care at UIHC for all Iowans. Turning now to the Insight page, Close the Medicaid Gap is the title of the guest editorial, a reprint from Wednesday's Washington Post. After months of doing nothing, Democrats in Congress appear poised to achieve something at last, or rather, multiple things, from protections for same-sex marriage to tens of billions of dollars toward computer chips to, finally, an economic package passed through reconciliation. There's still room for the majority to make this last something the best it can be. The deal Senate Majority Leader Charles Schumer, Democrat, New York, seems to have struck with swing-voting Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat, West Virginia, primarily involves a popular bill to let Medicare negotiate the prices of a select set of drugs, thereby driving down costs. The legislation is both a political and a policy win for the party. Better yet, it saves money that can be directed into other programs so that, with the blessing of the chamber's parliamentarian, the provisions together can bypass a filibuster. So far, Democrats look likely to extend enhanced Affordable Care Act subsidies for at least 2 years, preventing a spike in health insurance premiums that could push millions off the exchanges. And all this is more than welcome. It's essential. The only problem is that while the extended ACA subsidies will help low- to middle-income Americans stay insured, the poorest might end up left in the lurch. That's because in 12 states that have refused to adopt the landmark law's Medicaid expansion, an estimated 2.2 million people, mostly of color, languish in the so-called coverage gap, eligible neither for Medicaid nor for subsidies in the ACA marketplace. The reconciliation package Democrats are now teeing up would continue to assist those above the poverty line in purchasing coverage, but stick those below the poverty line with an impossible bill. Congress can still solve the issue. The numbers need to add up to satisfy Manchin, who wants to put much of the savings achieved through the prescription drug plan toward reducing the deficit. Another provision from the former Build Back Better to beef up the Internal Revenue Service's auditing capabilities could raise some revenue without the inflationary blowback that so worries the West Virginian Democrat. This is likely the last chance lawmakers have to stop what's already a tragedy from causing any more harm and taking any more lives. Democrats in the White House that says it's devoted to the country's most valuable can't afford to miss it. Again, that's a reprint from the Washington Post. 24-hour Dorman today is titled, Settled Law Rings Hollow. So, my congresswoman voted in favor of the Respect for Marriage Act, legislation providing federal protections for same-sex marriages. Good for her, although she thought it was a waste of time. Quote, I voted for the Respect for Marriage Act, legislation that respects and maintains settled law. Now, Democrats need to focus on policies that will help families, lowering costs for groceries and gas, securing our border to keep our communities safe, and getting our economy working again, end quote. Representative Ashley Hinson tweeted after the vote. U.S. Representative Marionette Miller-Meeks also voted for the bill. Big issues, to be sure, but so is protecting marriage equality from being tossed out by the Supreme Court, just like the constitutional right to abortion. Helping families can also mean stopping a radical court from ripping away civil rights. To use the term settled law, after watching a 50-year-old abortion precedent overturned, rings painfully, laughably hollow. There is no settled law when a high court pursuing a conservative agenda to remake the country is willing to mow down precedents tied to the right to privacy. Justice Clarence Thomas wrote in a concurring opinion in the Dobbs abortion ruling that its rationale could be used to strike at marriage equality, contraception access, and other similar precedents. It's just one justice, Republicans retort. Yep, one justice whose philosophy is now flowing through the conservative court majority's ideological bloodstream. Settled law is code for, don't worry, everything's fine. Things are not fine, and many Americans are worried. Republicans have been manufacturing outrage for so long over fake issues, they've forgotten what the real stuff looks like. So Democrats who run the U.S. House acted to protect those rights. If that's just political theater, as Republicans charge, it's a must-see production. Hinson and Miller-Meeks voted against a bill that seeks to protect access to a wide array of contraceptives, outlawing states from putting restrictions on their sale and use. Hinson and Miller-Meeks sought to paper over their votes by sponsoring an amendment calling for the Department of Human Services to expedite approval of oral contraceptives for over-the-counter sale to adults. The narrow measure falls far short of the protections offered in the broader bill. The contraceptive bill will die in the Senate, but the marriage equality bill has a chance if some Republican senators get on board. The right to same-sex marriage is not currently an issue, simply because one justice mentioned it very briefly in a previous decision in a concurrence that he wrote, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley said last week, saying he would have to read the bill before deciding how to vote. Sounds like settled law. He represents a state with legal same-sex marriage for 13 years, and none of the apocalyptic warnings of evangelical conservatives came to pass. But sure, take all the time you need. Senator Joni Ernst also is undecided. I have a good number of very close friends that are same-sex married, Ernst told reporters, according to HuffPost's Igor Bobic. Tell them it's settled law. They'll understand. And one community letter today is titled, The Freedom to Marry is an Important Issue. No matter our zip code, race, religion, or income, Iowans overwhelmingly agree that who a person chooses to marry is no one else's business. The freedom to marry is at the very heart of the Marriage Equality Act. It was truly disappointing to see my representative, Ashley Hinson, tweet, quote, I voted for the Respect for Marriage Act, legislation that respects and maintains settled law. Now Democrats need to focus on policies that will help families, end quote. What a slap in the face. Marriage equality may be settled law, but as we saw with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, any settled law is fair game for an extremist partisan Supreme Court to overturn. Marriage equality is far more than a piece of paper. It means anyone who chooses to marry can share benefits, health insurance, inheritance rights, file joint income taxes, and visit your partner in the hospital. This is absolutely a policy that will benefit families. Many same-gender couples fear losing their children if the courts dissolve marriage equality. While I agree with Hinson's vote, her commentary left me, and I'm sure others, feeling that Hinson fails to grasp the importance of the Marriage Equality Act to same-gender couples. That is signed today by Sam Blatt of Waterloo. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette on IRIS for today, Thursday, July 28. Turning to the obituary page, we start with the short notices. First, from Castalia, Marilyn Claudette Meyer, age 84, died Monday, July 25th. Schutte Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Postville is in charge of arrangements. From Edgewood, Alfred, known as Al Lee Pritchard, age 83, died Tuesday, July 26th. Leonard Muller Funeral Home and Crematory, Edgewood, is in charge. In Guttenberg, Janice Joan Bales, or Balls, age 81, died Tuesday, July 26th. Took Allen Funeral Home, Guttenberg, is assisting the family. From Independence, Earlene C. Trainer Pint, age 77, died Tuesday, July 26th. Reef Family Center, Independence. In Marion, Mary Jean, known as Jeannie Simonek, age 73, died Tuesday, July 26th. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Marion. In Olwine, Ruby B. Brewington, age 87, died Wednesday, July 27th. Jameson Schmidt's Funeral Home, Olwine, is assisting the family. And in another death, Priscilla A. Collins, age 70, of Manly, Iowa, died Monday, July 25th. The Jameson Schmidt's Funeral Home in Olwine is assisting the family. And in Vinton, Loyal, known as Butch Hoover, died Wednesday, July 27th. The Van Steenhuis Tien Funeral Home in Vinton is in charge. From Cedar Rapids, in the regular notices, Evelyn Geraldine, known as Jerry Molman, age 93, passed away Sunday, July 24th at the Methwick. Visitation will be held on Wednesday, September 14th at 10 a.m., and a memorial service at 11 a.m. at Salem United Methodist Church. As per her request, her body had been willed to the University of Iowa Deeded Body Program. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Marion, Barbara Marie Wallig, age 70, of Marion, died Sunday, July 24th due to injuries from a car accident. Services are at 11 a.m. Monday at the Tien Funeral Home by Penny Ackerman, burial at St. Joseph Cemetery. Friends may visit with the family on Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Tien Funeral Home and on Monday at the funeral home after 10 a.m. Online condolences can be left at the tienfuneralhome.com and memorials directed to the Cedar Valley Humane Society. From Hopkinton, Jeanette L. Murray, affectionately known as Nettie, passed away Monday, July 25th at the age of 63, surrounded by her family. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, July 28th at St. Luke's Catholic Church in Hopkinton, with a short vigil service starting at 3 p.m. Funeral services will be held at the church at 10:30 a.m. Friday, July 29th. With the Reverend Paul Baldwin officiating. Additional visitation hours will be held before the funeral mass from 9:30 to 10:30 Friday. Burial in the Hopkinton Cemetery will follow the funeral service. In Iowa City, Yvonne, known as Susie Oliver, age 80, died Tuesday, May 12. A celebration of life will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, August 4, at the Terry Trueblood Lodge, 579 McAllister Boulevard in Iowa City. A time of sharing stories will begin at 5 p.m. In Swisher, Mark William Henderson, passed away on Friday, July 22nd at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Online condolences may be expressed to the family. Private family celebration of service will be held. The Brosh Chapel and Abba Center in Cedar Rapids is in charge of arrangements. And in Marion, Patrick, known as Pat, Joseph Rausch, age 66, uncle, brother, and friend, passed away Tuesday, July 26th. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, July 30th at the Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Marion, with visitation an hour prior to the funeral service. Interment will take place following the memorial service at Troy Mills Cemetery in Troy Mills, Iowa. Donations in Pat's name may be made directly to the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice of Mercy or the charity of your choice. Please share a memory of Pat at murdochfuneralhome.com. And from Winthrop, Terry Lee Fairchild, age 80, entered into eternal rest July 26th at home, surrounded by his family. Terry had been fighting a courageous battle with liver cancer for many months. Visitation will be at Independence Community Bible Church from 3 to 6 p.m. Sunday, July 31st. A memorial service will be held at the same location, 10:30 a.m. Monday, August 1st, with Pastor Mike Nemers officiating. Interment will be at the Fairview Cemetery in Winthrop, Iowa. Memorials may be made to the Independence Community Bible Church, 301 2nd Street Southeast in Independence, in Terry's honor. The Reef Family Center Funeral Home and Crematory is assisting with arrangements. You can leave an online condolence at reeffamilycenter.com. And not a local death announcement, but this from the Washington Post. Tony Dow, who played All-American Wally on Leave It to Beaver, has died at age 77. Tony Dow died Wednesday at his home in Topanga, California, from complications of liver cancer, said his manager, Frank Bellota. His managerial team incorrectly announced his death, relying on erroneous family information. Leave It to Beaver aired from 1957 to 1963. Turning now to the sports page, we are kind of in a lull with high school sports, so here are a couple items from the sideline column. Midwest League Baseball, the Colonels scoot past the Timber Rattlers. 2 3-run frames fueled a 7-4 Cedar Rapids Colonels win over the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers on Wednesday. 8 of 9 Colonels collected a hit. All 9 reached base, and each hitter either scored a run or drove one in. The Colonels improved to 57-35, 14-12 in the second half. Cedar Rapids started things out with a bang in the first as Kyler Fedko and Seth Gray launched back-to-back solo shots to lead off the game. Game 3 of that series is set for 6:40 p.m. today. And in other news, pitcher Louis Rio was transferred to the Colonels from the FCL Twins. In an additional move, the club placed right-hander Sean Mooney on the 7-day injured list with a right neck sprain. And in pro hockey news, forwards Cole Stellard and Josh Kuplinger have re-signed with the Iowa Heartlanders for the 2022-23 pro hockey season, the club announced. Stellard joined Iowa a few weeks into the 2021-22 campaign and produced 12 goals and 25 points in 60 games. Kuplinger scored 3 goals for the Heartlanders in 12 games, after signing with Iowa in February. The Heartlanders opened their second season in the ECHL on October 21st. We like his size, and as he got more comfortable with our level, we saw him adjust, improve, and find ways to get himself in scoring positions, coach and general manager Derek Damon said. Josh earned the right to get up in the lineup by sticking to his improvement process, showing us he could score some goals and contribute. If you listen to sports on the radio, today the Cubs are at the Giants at 8:45 p.m. You can hear that on KXIC 800. Moving now to the Hoopla section, this story by Elijah Desius. Prepare to get your game on in a new basement that has become Iowa City's largest arcade bar. Off the pedestrian mall, Double Tap Beercade is popularizing a trend that started with earlier joints, like Spare Me in Iowa City and the Quarter Barrel in Cedar Rapids. With nostalgia serving as one of the biggest draws, the arcade, which opened at the end of June, has modernized a favorite pastime, giving adults an excuse to tap into their inner child. But the place to drink while neon colors and TV screens glow on your eyes isn't just a place to relive the past, it's part of a larger trend accelerated in part by the pandemic. 10 years ago, it was a novelty. 7 years ago, it became trendy. Today, I'd say it's a bona fide genre of the bar industry, said Darren Beck, managing partner and president of Paramount Bar Company, the bar's parent company. Video games and the arcades, popular in decades before home gaming systems became the norm, are clearly nothing new. But what's trending in places like Double Tap isn't the presence of the machines, it's the environment on which they're built. With almost 50 games, the variety ranges from classics like Frogger and Pac-Man to refurbished nostalgias like Pinball or Skee-Ball and modern options like The Simpsons and machines that can pit four players against each other. In brief, if you go, it's the Double Tap Beercade at 121 East College Street in Iowa City on the Ped Mall. Their hours are 3 p.m. to midnight Monday through Friday, noon to midnight Saturday and Sunday. In the music category, it's Music in the Courtyard by Diana Nolan. As Bruce Moore's summer music series evolved from Cabaret in the Courtyard to Music in the Courtyard over the past two decades, artisan in residence Gerard Estella has had a hand in all but one or two of the popular programs. For this 20th season, he's put together two shows that will alternate weekends beginning Friday and continuing through August 20. The first, titled Looking In, features vocalist Jordan Arnold, Jackson Bartlemy, and Kelsey Madsen, all of whom have theatrical backgrounds and have appeared in previous Courtyard concerts. Their program, with band members Estella, Lincoln Ginsburg, and Greg Kanz, will weave various elements and emotions driving the human experience. The second concert, Voices, showcases artists new to the series. Their program is described as focusing on the beauty of the human voice and how music unifies regardless of culture or background. In brief, if you go, it's Music in the Courtyard at Bruce Moore's Carriage House Courtyard, 2160 Linden Drive Southeast in Cedar Rapids. That takes place at 7:30 p.m. July 29th to August 20. Looking In, July 29 and 30 and August 11 to 13. Voices, August 5, 6, 18 to 20. Tickets are $30 for individual seats, $100 for a table of up to four people. Discounts for Bruce Moore members. You can go online at brucemoore.org/events, or you can call 319-362-7375. In other music interests, here's a story by Diana Nolan called Jazz Under the Stars. KCCK-FM's August Outdoor Series adds young artists in opening spots. With bass player Vivian Shanley of Cedar Rapids launching the lineup, KCCK's annual Jazz Under the Stars would be more aptly titled Stars Under the Jazz. The series is ready to light up Thursday nights in August at Knoll Ridge Park in Northeast Cedar Rapids, opening with Vivian Shanley and friends on August 4. She'll return August 18th doing double duty with her double bass as part of the 5K Quintet student ensemble at 6:30 before moving into the Iowa Women's Jazz Orchestra at 7 p.m. The KCCK website calls Shanley one of the most celebrated student musicians to come along in the state of Iowa in recent memory. Just 18 years of age, the recent Cedar Rapids Washington High School grad has won awards at the local, state, regional, and national level. She performs in various ensembles, launched her own teaching studio via Zoom during the pandemic, and now has about 10 students of varying ages and abilities on upright and electric bass. In brief, if you go, it's called Jazz Under the Stars at Knoll Ridge Park, 4900 Council Street Northeast in Cedar Rapids, near the playground. 6:30 p.m. Thursdays in August. This is free. And here's the schedule. August 4, Dandelion Stompers with Vivian Shanley and Friends opening. August 11, Betsy Hickok, Ron Wobert's Quintet with Yesternight opening. Also KCCK album and CD sale. On August 18th, Iowa Women's Jazz Orchestra with the 5K Quintet opening. On August 25, Blake Shaw Big-ish Band with Kirkwood Jazz Combo opening. Bring seating and picnics or buy food from vendors on site. There are no rain dates or sites, and for weather cancellations, turn to KCCK 88.3 FM. Turning now to the food category in the Hoopla section, Luzzi's has opened a second location inside the Stadium Bar and Grill's Lounge. The Loose Meat Sandwich Shop opened the Southwest Cedar Rapids location, 957 Rockford Road Southwest, on July 9. The new location came about after Luzzi's food truck helped Stadium Bar and Grill after a fire temporarily closed the kitchen. People on the west side want a Luzzi's, owner Norm Wilkerson said. This was an opportunity for us to do that. Owners Norm and Sandy Wilkerson started Luzzi's in June 2019 at 1611 32nd Street Northeast inside a renovated house. The couple had expanded through their food truck, but were previously limited in their expansion plans by a labor shortage. The original location will be maintained along with their food truck. The new location will help keep sales brisk in the winter, which Norm said is traditionally a slow time for Luzzi's on 32nd Street. In addition to their menu classics, the new location will be able to offer more variety and exclusive specials not available at the original site. With True Fryers, the Southwest site will serve up fries, tater tots, and homemade specials like fried bologna and meatball sandwiches. The new location is open from 11 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 11 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday. And the Reunion Brewery is planning to open a second location between September 10th and 20th at 111 East College Street in downtown Iowa City. Construction on the new Ped Mall site is slated for completion by mid-August. Brewing and kitchen equipment was secured earlier this year. The new location's main level bar will fill the space formerly occupied by the Fieldhouse Bar more than a decade ago. Reunion also will extend into the former space of Gavani's, which was later home to El Patron and Gray's. Turning to the Business 380 page, this story from the Gazette, Tippy College plans to offer an insurance major. The University of Iowa's Tippy College of Business announced it will start a risk management and insurance major in the fall of 2023 after the Board of Regents approved it Wednesday morning. The major will be the only such program in the state, Tippy College said in a news release, and students who complete the program will receive a Bachelor of Business Administration. More than 60,000 Iowans work in the insurance and risk management profession, which makes up 11% of the state's economy, the news release said. Insurance companies based in Iowa or with a sizable presence in the state include United Fire Group, Transamerica, Principal Employers Mutual, Athene, W.R. Berkley, and Farm Bureau. Thomas Barry Stoltz, Associate Professor of Finance, Nationwide Faculty Fellow, and Faculty Director of the college's Vaughan Institute, said that the field offers such career opportunities as claims managers, underwriters, brokers, employee benefits managers, and risk modeler. The industry also is expected to grow as climate change, cyber attacks, and other hazards will require companies to better manage those risks. Every business decision involves risk, so having a sound understanding of how risk works will help students in any career. and provides a strong foundation no matter what direction they want to go, Barry Stoltz said. Our new major will prepare students for a fast-track career in the insurance and risk management industry, and they will be able to jump into leadership positions earlier in their career. Barry Stoltz said the department's researchers will make discoveries that strengthen and grow the industry. He expects the new major eventually will enroll up to 80 students annually. He added the college also will continue to offer its insurance and risk management certificate. One more Iowa Today story of local interest, this by Emily Anderson. The downtown Cedar Rapids Public Library is closed until further notice after a fire broke out in a light fixture above the commons area on Wednesday, according to a news release. The sprinkler system activated and the fire was quickly extinguished. The extent of damage to the building is not yet known, but books and other library materials do not appear to have been damaged by the water, the release states. The library was safely evacuated and no one was injured. The library will remain closed through today and possibly longer, depending on how much cleanup is necessary. Hold times and due dates will be extended accordingly. Again, a light fixture fire has caused the closing of the downtown Cedar Rapids Library. Finishing up with a look at the weather, mostly sunny today through Sunday, actually, with a high of 79 in Cedar Rapids today and Iowa City. The low is expected to be in the mid-50s. Warming up by the end of the week with a high of 85 on Sunday in Cedar Rapids and Iowa City. Normally, the high for today is 83 and the low is 63. The record high of 103 degrees was set in 1931. The record low of 47 was set in 1925. Sunset tonight is at 8:30 p.m., sunrise tomorrow at 5:57 a.m. That gives us 14 hours and 34 minutes of daylight. We are in the new moon phase, with moon rise at 6:31 a.m. and moon set at 9:31 p.m. That does it for the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Thursday, July 28th. I've been your reader, Kathleen. You can access today's recording online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you for listening and have a great, safe day.
People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. With half a dozen measles outbreaks currently underway in the U.S., as well as several serious international outbreaks, the news on measles vaccine from Denmark is important. Researchers conducted a nationwide study that included everyone born between 1999 and 2010. With more than 650,000 children in that group, they had more than 5 million person-years of follow-up. The Danish health system keeps excellent records on all of its citizens, including the children. Consequently, the scientists are confident that the 6,517 children diagnosed with autism during the study period are all the children who developed this condition. Children who did not receive the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, or MMR, were equally likely as vaccinated children to develop autism. The investigators conclude, the study strongly supports that MMR vaccination does not increase the risk for autism, does not trigger autism in susceptible children, and is not associated with clustering of autism cases after vaccination.
The Food and Drug Administration has just approved a completely new type of antidepressant. The nasal spray, called esketamine, is expected to help people who have not responded to standard antidepressants. It will be marketed under the brand name Spravato. This drug is chemically related to the injectable anesthetic ketamine that's been on the market since 1970 and is available generically. Although esketamine is administered as a nasal spray, people will not be permitted to purchase it for home use. they will need to use Spravato under medical supervision at a clinic or doctor's office. Some experts have challenged the FDA's approval process for esketamine. While two clinical trials demonstrated some benefit, two others did not show that esketamine is better than placebo. Side effects of this novel antidepressant include nausea, dizziness, headache, and a feeling of dissociation.
FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb unexpectedly announced his departure from the agency this week. Experts were puzzled by his announcement since he has received high marks from the administration, industry, and even some consumer groups. Dr. Gottlieb has raised questions about teen vaping and has been an outspoken critic of pharmacy chains that sell tobacco products to minors. Some commentators speculate that these stances might be related to his abrupt departure. His explanation for the sudden departure is that he wants to spend more time with his wife and young children. Dr. Gottlieb is a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Another week, another drug recall. Many lots of ARB blood pressure drugs, including losartan, valsartan, and irbesartan, have been recalled over the past 8 months. These medicines were contaminated with potential carcinogens known as NDMA and NDEA. Now, Hetero Labs has recalled 87 lots, and Tarrant Pharmaceuticals Limited is recalling 100 lots of losartan tablets. These pills contain an entirely new contaminant just identified as NMBA. It, too, is a suspected carcinogen. All three of these nitrosamine contaminants are apparently created as a result of the manufacturing process. FDA Commissioner Gottlieb stated, "We're making important strides at understanding how these impurities form, and we're continuing to examine if nitrosamine impurities may also arise during the manufacture of other ARB drug products. The FDA is committed to implementing measures to prevent the formation of these impurities during drug manufacturing processes in the future."
Cocoa flavonoids may have some benefit for people with multiple sclerosis, according to a small study. Previous research showed that dark chocolate rich in cocoa compounds might improve symptoms of chronic fatigue. The investigators recruited 40 people with relapsing remitting MS to drink cocoa every day for 6 weeks. 19 of them got high flavonoid cocoa, while 21 drank low flavonoid cocoa. At the end of the study, those on the high flavonoid cocoa had slightly less fatigue and could walk somewhat farther in 6 minutes than they had at the outset. They also reported less pain. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.